Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Desk Ornaments by Andy Hertzfeld. Time frame October 1981. The first major architectural decision for the Macintosh stated that we were only going to try to run one application at a time. Bud Tribble and I agreed that we barely had enough RAM or screen space to do even that, and we thought that we'd benefit from the resultant simplifications. Besides, multitasking was supposed to be the Lisa's forte, and we didn't want to usurp all of the reasons for buying the Mac's more expensive relative. Bud was usually on an even keel, but one afternoon in the fall of 1981, he came into my office unusually excited. "You know, I've been thinking about it. Even if we can only run one major application at a time, there's no reason that we can't also have some little miniature applications running in their own windows." That sounded intriguing to me. "What kind of little programs? How are they different?" Bud smiled. "You'd want tiny applications that were good at a specific, limited function that would complement the main application, like a little calculator that looked like a real calculator, or maybe even an alarm clock or a notepad for jotting down text. Since the entire screen is supposed to be a metaphorical desktop, the little programs work just like desk ornaments, adorning the desktop with useful features." "But where do we draw the line?" I asked. "What are the differences between an ornament and a real application?" "Well, ornaments have to fit into the world of the main application," Bud responded, "but not the other way around. The main application owns the menu bar, for example, but maybe the ornaments could have a menu when they're active. The main application would still run its event loop, but it would occasionally pass events to the little guys. And, of course, you could cut and paste between them." That sounded good to me, but we had plenty of other tasks to finish first. Bud left Apple in December of 1981 to return to medical school, but I explained his concept to new team members and considered them to be part of our plan. Chris Espinoza liked the idea when we explained it to him, and he worked on a visualization of the calculator as part of learning how to program QuickDraw, culminating in a calculator construction set. By May of 1982, we had enough of the rudiments done to give desk ornaments a try. The nascent Macintosh operating system already featured an implementation of loadable device drivers, where installable code could be loaded from disk to manage peripherals. I decided to cast desk ornaments as a special kind of driver, adding a few extra calls so that they could maintain a window on the screen, receive events from the host application, and occasionally get some processing time to accomplish something. Applications were required to make a periodic system call to yield some time for the ornaments to run, along with a few other conventions for coexisting with them. The very first desk ornament was a boring one, called Test Orn, that displayed a rectangular window with an incrementing counter, showing that it was capable of doing background processing even when it wasn't the topmost window. It wasn't very impressive, but it was the template from which all other desk ornaments were born. In the fall of 1982, the first pass of the user interface toolbox was completed. I was now free to work on more desk ornaments, which by this time had been renamed Desk Accessories by the Pubs group, who thought that the term ornament was too ornamental. I wrote a simple clock and got the calculator going, modeled after Steve Jobs' design from the calculator construction set. The most interesting desk accessory that I wrote in that spurt was an editor for desktop patterns. It was a sort of miniature icon editor that let you edit an 8x8 pixel pattern by clicking to toggle the dots on and off. When you made a pattern that you liked, you could make it the desktop pattern, filling the background of the screen with your new creation instead of the standard gray. It wasn't long before other people wanted to take a crack at writing desk accessories. Someone asked if they could write one in Pascal. This wouldn't have been very easy because you had to pass parameters to the underlying driver in registers, and the Pascal compiler couldn't manipulate those directly. As a workaround, I wrote a little bit of glue code in assembly language to do the dirty work, allowing people to write their own desk accessories in Pascal despite the compiler's limitations. I even wrote a little number puzzle to prove that it could be done. The desk accessories languished once again as I focused on other work, but by the spring of 1983, the ROM was beginning to stabilize, and we had to start thinking seriously about the desk accessories that would ship with the system software. Jerome assigned Don Denman to help us, since he was taking a hiatus from working on Mac Basic. Don and I finished the calculator, with Don doing the backend that interfaced with the floating point routines. He also wrote the alarm clock and the notepad. Now that we had cut and paste working in the system software, I thought it might be useful to have a desk accessory that could hold commonly used snippets of text and graphics, ready to be pasted into any application. I wrote another desk accessory called the Gallery that allowed you to manage a set of clippings using cut and paste, leveraging the Resource Manager to speed up development. Everyone seemed to like Gallery, except for its name. I was explaining the situation to Larry Kenyon when he suggested that we call it the Scrapbook, which I thought was perfect. The Scrapbook joined our growing armada of useful desk accessories. The Macintosh's character encoding scheme allocated the upper half of the 8-bit character set to occasionally useful but obscure characters that were not portrayed on the keys. You could access these characters in combination with the Option key, but these combinations were very difficult to remember. Steve Capps conceived of a desk accessory called Key Caps, perhaps named partially after himself, that displayed a picture of the keyboard, with the key caps changing depending on the meta keys that were pressed. This allowed you to quickly hunt for the special, hard-to-find characters. The Macintosh needed a place for the user to control various system parameters, like the sound volume or the mouse scaling. The team decided that a desk accessory would be the perfect format for such a thing, since it would be easy to access no matter what application you were running. And so the very last desk accessory that I worked on before shipping in November 1983 was the control panel. Susan Kerr came up with a beautiful, highly graphical design that was also language neutral since it featured no text whatsoever. I implemented the control panel using separate purgeable resources for each section so that all the different sections didn't have to be in memory at once. The control panel featured a little rabbit and tortoise to represent a range of speeds and lots of other graphical embellishments. After the Mac was released, one review described it as a crib toy, which I took more or less as a compliment. The most controversial part of the control panel was the desktop pattern editor, which I had rescued from its earlier standalone incarnation. Users could select from a couple of dozen prefabricated desktop patterns or edit their own in Mac Paint's FatBits style. It was this latter capability that caused people concern, as it was quite easy to create ugly, abominable patterns. Bill Atkinson complained to me that it was a mistake to allow users to specify their own desktop patterns, since it was harder to make a nice one than it seemed, and led directly to ugly desktops. But I thought that users should be free to do as they pleased, since it was their desktop, and it was easy to revert to one of the built-in patterns. Bill cared most about Mac Paint, and didn't want a potentially ugly desktop pattern marring his creation. So, he made Mac Paint allocate a window that was the size of the screen when it started up, and filled it with a standard 50% gray pattern, making his own desktop and covering up the real one. This protected users from their rash aesthetic blunders, at least while they were within the friendly confines of Mac Paint.